Hello, everyone. This is Christian Brassard again, finally with another episode of the Historical Thoughts and Interpretations podcast. Right now, it is mid-January 2024, and it's been a long time since I did an episode. Life has been quite busy lately, over the last year or so I didn't really put a lot of time into doing podcasting as other things in life took over. But I would like to do more, and I'm not a huge fan of New Year's resolutions, but I do have a few goals for this podcast, and this is one of them, to put out this one episode before the end of the month. So what about this episode right here? So this episode, I want to introduce something that I want to work on in the future and talk a little bit about what that concept will be, or what this series or series of discussions and episodes will be. So what I want to talk about is the one thing that you may have noticed if you've been a listener to my podcast for a while. You will notice that I've mentioned a lot where something is not necessarily a monolith. And I've mentioned this specifically about communism, right? One of the things that is very common in the Western world, where I'm from, is that a lot of people will dismiss communism, for example, by just saying communism is all the same, right? Every form of communism is the same. You look at the Soviet Union, you look at China, you look at Cuba, you look at North Korea, all of them are exactly the same, all of them lead to exactly the same result, and so on. Now, disclaimer here, I am not endorsing communism or anything like that, but the thing is, even if you dislike something, even if you don't agree with something or an idea, one of the worst things you can do is misrepresent it, either maliciously or by mistake, right? Because that does happen too. Sometimes we have misconceptions about something we disagree with or agree with. This podcast is called Historical Thoughts and Interpretations. So one of the ideas is that we can misinterpret something by looking at it wrongly. We could have been taught it wrongly, or we have a different opinion than what is actual fact. So we can come in with rose-colored glasses, or, I don't know, garbage-colored glasses, I guess, and look at something in a very positive or a very negative way, right? So that's what can happen, and what I've noticed a lot of people do, like I said, in the Western world, and I'm sure other parts of the world, they will look at a communist country or a communist system and put it on just one block, right? So it's like if you automatically look at, you know, voter patterns in the States, I'm not sure if you do, but someone might look at voter patterns in the States and say, every white person in the South is going to vote for the Republicans. Every black person in the South is going to vote for Democrats. Every white person in the North is going to vote for Democrats. Every black person in the North is going to vote for Democrats too, right? So, you know, it's a mixture. Like, obviously, there might be elements of truth in that, those assertions about those voter patterns, but they oversimplify things, right? So what about black conservatives? What about, you know, liberal white people in the South? Right? So if you don't take in those other nuances, and I just put out very basic nuances, and I'm not an expert in the subject by any means, so I can't really say much about that subject in particular. But if you look at things like that in a different way that is from reality, you're going to have a misconception. So one of the things that I want to do in what I mentioned in the podcast many times is talking about communism is not a monolith. It's not a monolithic idea where one size fits all, right? So that's very important to remember. And, you know, when you apply this lesson to certain things, you apply it to, you are able to look at something historically or even currently in a different way, right? You know, countries don't invade each other for the same reasons, right? Sometimes they will invade each other for land. Sometimes they will invade each other for the sense of a political or a geopolitical threat. You know, the Russian invasion of Ukraine that started just about 2 years ago and the U.S. invasion of Iraq about two decades ago are similarly motivated, this thing of a preemptive invasion to prevent a future threat, right? At the very basic level, that was the same. But obviously the circumstances leading up to them were completely different, right? So that's the situation there. So I want to introduce this idea of looking at the different kinds of communism and just very briefly introduce some of them, right? And obviously I'm just going to scratch the surface a little bit here. And in this particular episode, I don't want to bring up any huge points or no big discussion. Just bring up the bullet points of different communist ideologies that I would like to research and discuss in more depth later on. Again, I'm recording this in January 2024, and as I do more research, I may correct some of the points I'm saying now. You know, there's a lot about these subjects that I don't know at this point right now. So this short episode is just a starting point, and I'm not going to give any promises right now of what of when the next episode will come out and so on. But I just wanted to outline some of these things. I will mention many ideologies here without being able to say much about them. And then later we'll come with more research and myself learning more about it. And I want to dedicate more time to the ideologies and kind of look into it more and speak about it more. But for now, let's just outline them. And when I mention leaders, like thought leaders or leaders of certain communist ideologies in this episode, I may mention policies, but what I really want the focus to be on in the future episodes that I do regarding this, I want to focus on ideology, not necessarily policy or the history of how they played out. You know, obviously that will be mentioned, but that won't necessarily be the focus, right? The focus will be on the ideology. I don't think I will look at every single one of these ideologies. I'll probably pick a few of them, particularly the Russian ones, of course, and maybe the Chinese ones, some of the major ones, and maybe some of the more perhaps obscure or maybe lesser known ones. But I don't, when I say these ideologies, mention these ideologies in the outline, that doesn't mean I will talk about them in a future episode, but I just want to mention them as a possible future topic. And also, as just to show the sheer amount, when you say communism, and if somebody says that this is, oh, that's just one block, one monolith, you can mention also these other things, these other ideologies that have stemmed from this main one, this main root of communism. So let's go into it. Number one, Marxism, the man himself, Karl Marx, and also Friedrich Engels as well. So who came up with that idea of Marxism or communism? Of course, what are some of the main points of Marxism? So there's this kind of a dichotomy or a Manichaean idea of pitting the proletariat, the workers, against the bourgeois. You know, the oppressive master class, the oppressive employers, and so on. And so then the idea was of a revolution to supplant this supplant this bourgeois dominance over the proletariat, right? So the proletariat must, quote-unquote, seize the means of production. So instead of the bourgeois running a factory and having the proletariat or the workers work in that factory for low wages and oppression and causing colonialism to increase the, you know, fill the pockets of the bourgeois, you know, the proletariat must take control of that instead of the bourgeois, right? So that's a very basic idea. And there's kind of this sense of historical eschatology, where eventually there will be communism. And this happens in stages of history. So we go back to the ancient times where there was slavery, and then eventually we go to the medieval times. There was serfdom, not quite slavery, but pretty close. And then eventually capitalism, and then you hear terms like late-stage capitalism, and so on and so on and so forth, until you get socialism, and then eventually communism, where nobody lacks anything. So some of the works that Karl Marx produced, a German philosopher, by the way, not a Russian one, The Communist Manifesto and Das Kapital. So now let's go to Russia and the Soviet Union, the first communist country. So there was a communist revolution in November 1917, after Vladimir Lenin's communist party, the Bolsheviks, had been acting in the Russian Duma as political parties, along with other parties, including the communist Mensheviks. But Vladimir Lenin, came up with his own form of communism, known as Marxism-Leninism. So you'll see this term inside Russia and even outside Russia as well, when describing his own form of communism. So what Lenin thought was necessary for a successful revolution was to have a quote-unquote professional communist revolutionary party, not amateurs or unprofessional zealots, right? So he favored acting through the seizure of power, taking it, rather than through working through the Imperial Duma Parliament and the provisional government, which acted after the Tsar abdicated. Right? So he favored the seizure of power and professional communist revolution. What is to be done is one of his works, and the state and revolution is another work of his. So now let's move on to Stalinism. Stalinism, of course, is characterized by a lot of repression, censorship, and mass execution, famine, and everything. So one of the things that he did a little bit earlier on was attacking the kulak class. The kulaks were rich peasants in the Soviet Union, and so he saw them as a threat, and he used them, he targeted them for being, you know, for stealing from the state and so on, and blaming them for stealing from the people. In attacking the kulaks, he reversed some of Lenin's policy, the new economic policy that allowed some forms of capitalism, right? So, and under Stalinism, there was the centralization of state power and the collectivization of production. So this led to the Holodomor, which was a mass famine that especially affected Ukraine, but also affected what is now Kazakhstan and parts of Russia as well. As far as ideology and communism goes, Stalin decided that it was better to pursue socialism in one country, even though the Soviet Union was kind of the center of the Comintern, or kind of a worldwide community of communists. The thing is that you need to understand the circumstance in this as well. After the Russian Civil War, around that time, communist Russia had a war with Poland, and this failed. And also there was the Russian Civil War against the so-called whites, which had, were more like imperial, how can I say, remnants, I suppose, you know, Star Wars reference there. And also they wanted to fight the new communists that were in power, right? So that led to a devastating civil war. The communist side won that war, but there was a lot of devastation. So looking at Stalin's situation, it's understandable why he would come up with this policy of socialism in one country rather than a worldwide revolution. You know, we tried to get past Poland, we couldn't. So, and also when it comes to Stalinist communist ideology, there was also a major personality cult built around Stalin, right? Everything points to Stalin. Stalin is our great man. What are some of the works that Stalin wrote? Joseph Stalin himself wrote Foundations of Leninism, Marxism and the National Question, Dialectical and Historical Materialism. This last part was talking about a Marxist philosophy, this idea of dialectics and materialism, where everything is in constant change. Now, what about Leon Trotsky? So, or this way, then his ideology is known as Trotskyism. So he, as opposed to Stalin's socialism in one country idea, Trotsky advocated world revolution. During the Russian Civil War, he led the Soviet Red Army, and he was crucial in the Red Army's foundation. Leon Trotsky had a falling out with Stalin, and he was eventually killed in Mexico in 1940 by a Soviet spy. What about Khrushchev? More like when it comes to ideology, we can point to his denunciation of Stalinism in the secret speech during the 20th Communist Party of the Soviet Union Congress. In this Congress speech, in the more public part of the Congress speech, he indicated competition with capitalist world, with the capitalist West, so to speak. So he was obviously antagonistic towards the West in many ways because of the Cuban Missile Crisis and so on, but he did talk about this cooperative competition, right? But again, in terms of ideology, I think he's most famous for the denunciation of the Stalinist personality cult. And other Soviet leaders that we can talk about, and we can look more into their communist ideology later on, Leonid Brezhnev, Yuri Andropov, and Konstantin Chernenko. So we can look more into any ideology there. I'm not aware of any big ideological changes in terms of communism, but we'll be looking more into that. And as far as Mikhail Gorbachev goes, We can certainly look at his policies of perestroika or restructuring and glasnost, which allowed a lot more freedom and released a relaxed censorship across the Soviet Union. Not trying to destroy communism, but trying to reform it to change it so that we are not, we're not going to collapse, which his project failed. But the ideology was definitely trying to break with the past. Okay, and then what about communism in Russia post-Cold War? There are two major communist parties in Russia right now. The Communist Party of the Russian Federation, led by Gennady Zyuganov, and the other party is the Communists of Russia, led by Sergei Melnikovich. So I would like to look more into their ideology there. So one of the questions that I have is, you know, how do these parties feel about Stalin? Did they carry on the Gorbachev policies of perestroika and glasnost, like wanting to be open, wanting to look back at the Soviet Union and perhaps rebuild that, but what is the ideology of that? So that's something I'm actually very curious about. And so why are there two communist parties in Russia? That's actually something I really want to look into more, and I'll be looking more into that, and we'll be seeing. And now going outside Russia and the Soviet Union, let's look at China, the second major communist state. It wasn't the second communist state. Obviously, when the Soviet Union was going through Germany and they set up their satellite states and after World War II in Europe, and then also even in Northeast Asia, North Korea was formed after the Soviet Union took Northern Korea from Japan at the end of World War II. So China wasn't the second communist state, but it was the second major one. So the first thing we can look at is definitely Maoism. Chairman Mao Zedong had fought against the Chinese government then, before World War II, and then with the Chinese government, working with them in a sort of united front against the Japanese invaders. But when it came to communism, Mao advocated the popular movement. He didn't really go for Lenin's professional revolutionary direction. He didn't really go in that direction. And like Stalin, he went for a personality cult, right? So he went for a personality cult, and that was, I believe, that was a really big factor in the Cultural Revolution in the 1960s, when it was like, it was time to get rid of the olds. It was time to get rid of the old things in China, old culture, old philosophies, and so on, and just destroy everything and rebuild everything. And he was able to, that was a massive movement for getting people to destroy those things, you know, challenge old things about honoring and respecting parents and so on, and teachers and that. So that was a big thing for in Maoism. And Charles Haas, in his book Comparative Politics, he argues that this point was a really big sticking point with the Soviet Union, right? Remember, as I just mentioned, this was when Nikita Khrushchev was denouncing the Stalinist cult in the Soviet Union. Right. And so now Mao is starting to build up his personality cult. And so that was one of the reasons Charles Haas says that the Soviet Union and China started to split, the so-called Sino-Soviet split. And after Mao, we can talk more about Deng Xiaoping, you know, and this kind of this reform era where China is starting to become more capitalist. And then even now, you know, some will even talk about, like, you know, is China really communist anymore? Because it's such a big, huge capitalistic center and a huge capitalist country. So we'll be looking a bit more into that. What about some other countries? And these are areas that I know much less about. But I would like to explore and talk about in future podcasts. Vietnam, Ho Chi Minh thought. Okay, what about North Korea? Juche. This is the ideology of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, ruled by the Kim dynasty. Kim Il-sung, Kim Jong-il, Kim Jong-un. The idea of Juche is self-reliance, right? The idea of self-reliance. We need to rely on ourselves as a country, right? So that's the big ideology of North Korea, North Korean communism. What about Cuba? Fidel Castro and his ideology. What about the communism in Cuba today? Yugoslavia, Marshal Josip Tito. So one of the things that Tito's, how he is different from the rest of the communist world, is that he, yes, Yugoslavia was a communist country and had many of the things such as, you know, repression and so on, but it also had this, it was also part of the non-aligned movement and part of the so-called third world. Not third world in terms of development, like where countries are not developed or anything like that. Not that. But this idea of the third world or the non-aligned movement. You know, we want to stay neutral. We don't want to align with the Soviet Union or the United States and the West. We don't want that. We want to be our own little group, right? So other countries in that were Egypt, and at the time were Egypt and Indonesia. Those were two other countries in that non-aligned movement of wanting to be our own thing. So even though Tito ran a communist Yugoslavia, he wasn't really in lockstep with Stalin and other Soviet leaders, as many of the other communist countries were, kind of considered like their Soviet satellites. You know, countries like Poland, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, and so on, were part of the Warsaw Pact, right? But Yugoslavia wasn't. Yugoslavia didn't join up with that. What about Albania under Enver Hoxha? Right. So as I understand it, from what very little I know about communist Albania, Enver Hoxha was very concerned about being invaded. Right. So he massed a lot of he had a lot of bunkers and massed huge military forces. Right. So as I understand it, you know, remember, this is recording mid-January 2024. So things may change as I carry on. Right. So that's one thing about probably most likely like an isolationist. I don't know. Can I compare it with North Korea? We'll see. What about Cambodia under Pol Pot? And the Pol Pot is infamous for leading the Khmer Rouge in the 1970s, which led Cambodia into a really nasty, oppressive communist regime where everybody was supposed to be equal in every single way. And I'm not sure of the numbers, so I don't want to say any number being misinformed. But at least thousands, if not maybe millions, I'm not quite sure, killed in the killing fields in Cambodia, right? So probably one of the worst examples of communism, of a communist state. Right? What about Laos? Laos is a communist country today. So what about their communism? What is their ideology? Is it different from Vietnam nowadays, which is also a communist country, right? So now, what about Africa? What about Africa and Marxism? So we don't really think of communism when we think of Africa. So one thing to keep in mind is that a lot of, like, I actually talked about this in my previous podcast episode. I was able to talk with Dr. Natalia Telepnieva about her book and how the independence movements in Portuguese colonies in Africa, such as Guinea-Bissau, Angola, Sao Tome Principe, and Mozambique, were able to connect with the Soviet Union, right? And so because of communist, anti-colonist, anti-colonial ideology, this was seemed like a good fit for these movements to kind of tie themselves to. Right? But a lot of these movements were not necessarily Marxist, but perhaps Marxist-aligned. Right? You know, we can also think about Arab nationalist movements, such as Ba'athism in Syria and Iraq. They weren't Marxist, but they were sort of socialist Marxist aligned, if you can put it that way, right? Because they had that common message with the Marxists of anti-colonialism and socialism as well, right? But there was sort of a mixing, you know, the Arab nationalists, they weren't necessarily anti-religious as Marxism is, right? And so on. So these movements in Africa, they were looking for African liberation, thus anti-colonialism. And so we can look at examples of Mozambique, such as Frelimo, which is still in power today in Mozambique ever since 1975. What about Zimbabwe? The ZANU and ZAPU's movements, which eventually merged into the current ruling party of Zimbabwe, ZANU-PF, right? So In the research that I've done so far, I've again seen them as Marxist-aligned. Not Marxist, but Marxist-aligned, right? So this is something we could also look into. Okay, what else? The 12th category I have in my outline here. What about Western communist or Marxist movements? You know, we've looked a lot into, Marxism, which originally started in Germany, but then it eventually manifested into revolution in the Soviet Union and eventually in China and then spread to North Korea, Eastern Europe and stuff. So what about in the Western world? What kind of communist or Marxist movements were there? So one example is the Frankfurt School. That's one example. And I know almost nothing about this, so I don't want to say too much more. And what kind of communist thinking can we see in non-communist countries, such as Canada and the U.S.? Canada has two or three communist parties. What about the United States? So I would like to look into those things. So now, I've outlined 13 very broad, may I say, manifestations of communism. So, of course, Marxism, communism in the Soviet Union, Russia in the Soviet Union, China, Vietnam, North Korea, Cuba, Yugoslavia, Albania, Cambodia, Laos, Africa, Western communist movements, and in non-communist countries. Well, I guess the last two are kind of in the same category. So now the thing is, this is what I need to do. I need to kind of counsel myself here. Because a lot of times when I start looking into something, I can kind of get very excited and kind of get lost in the weeds, you know. Instead of having like a secure or sound plan, I can just rush in and just start reading all kinds of things about this and not really have a thesis or a message, right? So I need to be very careful of that. And there's a lot to look at. There's a lot to read. There's a lot to analyze and so on. So what do I want to focus on with all these ideologies? And again, I should say, I am not promising I will look at every single one of those. I will certainly look at those. Like, I do really want to look at the Russian ones. I want to look at the Chinese ones, the Vietnamese, North Korean, the African ones. I think those ones are the most interesting to me. And perhaps, you know, definitely I think Albania would be very interesting too, because it just seems so different from the others. And Yugoslavia is unique because it was communist, but in the Third World Movement. So I would like to look at those ones at least. But these ones that I want to look at, I just don't want to list the philosophies. I want to have a framework. So think about when you're comparing two different things. You're comparing things on a chart, you're looking at them. Like kind of cost and benefit analysis, right? Kind of like that. But what about, instead of comparing communism, what about comparing religions? What do we have to compare? So, for example, religion is going to be concerned about a number of different things, right? So you can assume or surmise that every religion is going to talk about the nature of the divine, right? Is the divine a god? Is the divine like kind of this force in the universe? Is the divine kind of this thing that we can't touch? Or is the divine a tree? I don't know. You know, something like this. So a religion will look at what is the nature of the divine, right? So that's one point that we can compare. The soul. What about the nature of the soul? What has a soul? Does a dog have a soul? Does a person have a soul? Do the mountains have a soul or some kind of a spirit? You know, so those are the things. That's another thing that you can compare religions to. What is the nature of an afterlife? Or is there an afterlife? What is considered sin? What is considered bad in this religion? What is considered righteous? How is one saved from sin if salvation is necessary? And what about eschatology, right? Remember I mentioned that Marxism has this idea of this eschatology that eventually we will build a communist system where no one needs anything. Everyone has we all need air, of course, but no one suffers need. Let's put it that way. I worded it wrongly. So Marxism has this eschatology of this end state of things, right? So what's the eschatology of this religion? And what about ecumenicism? Ecumenicism. right? So how does it relate to other religions? So if you want to, let's just take an example of Christianity and let's say Islam. So taking those two religions, what do we have to compare? So what are the nature of the divine? So do these religions believe in God? Yes, they both do. But then you can kind of break it down a little bit more. What is the nature of that divine God, right? In Christianity, we see that there's a God, and most Christian traditions, and even then, Christianity is not a monolith. You have different traditions and beliefs within a broad category of what people will call Christianity or Christendom. So most traditions in Christianity will believe in the Trinity, where God is God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit. While in Islam, that is heresy, right? This idea of, I believe the concept is Tawhid, one. God is not divisible in Islam. So that's a way you can compare them. What about the soul? Do Muslims and Christians believe that human beings have a soul? Yes. Do Muslims and Christians believe that animals have souls? No. I mean, maybe there's a certain sect of one of those or two religions that do, but I'm not aware of any. What about the afterlife? You know, Christians believe in heaven and hell. Well, again, that's a very broad view. What about Islam? Same thing, heaven and hell as well. What is sin? You know, there are many of the ideas of sin are very common, but in Christianity, in most forms of Christianity, eating pork is not a sin, but in Islam it is. So, and what is righteous? And I believe that most Christians and most Muslims would agree on what is righteous. What is salvation? You know, many will look in the Bible and say that you must believe in Jesus, you must confess his name and be baptized for the forgiveness of your sins. Well, Muslims do not believe in baptism, especially in the name of Jesus. And then eschatology, the end state of things, right? So many Christians, I believe most Christians believe in the second coming of Jesus, where Jesus will judge the living and the dead. And then the world will, the universe as we know it, the physical universe will be completely destroyed, right? And then in Islam, I'm not sure. I don't want to say anymore because I'm not sure. So in that case, that is the situation, right? So we have this framework of talking about what is the nature of God, the soul, afterlife, and so on, that we can compare these religions to each other, right? And so with communism, getting back to our topic here, let's start with common foundations. So one of the things, so the framework that I've come across or I've come up with, one of the framework I want to look at is I want to focus for each of these ideologies I'm going to do in episode 4. I want to look at these following things. So how do the different communist ideologies view one, class conflict, right? This idea of proletarian versus bourgeois. So one, class conflict. Two, revolution. Perhaps this is the greatest difference that I've come across so far. So how should the revolution be done? Through the government's political systems or through a violent uprising? Should this be a localized revolution, such as Stalin's socialism in one country, or should it be a world revolution? Right? So how should it be done? Who should be in doing this revolution? Should it be done by a select few professionals, or should it be done by the mass public? Right? And what is the end state or end goal? You know, is the end goal, you know, again, a world revolution, where every state is communist, or should we create this stable communist system in a local area and work with capitalist countries, and eventually they will come to join us in communism? You know, so that idea of revolution, how should it be done and who should be doing it, right? So that's another aspect I want to compare these different ideologies to. Three, foreign policy. You know, ideology will affect foreign policy. So are we going to be isolationist, like North Korea under Duce, or Albania under Enver Hoxha, or I think Cambodia under Khmer Rouge as well? Again, should we cooperate with the West, like the Soviet Union eventually came to? So foreign policy. Number four, fourth point, relations with other form of communism. So I mentioned the Sino-Soviet split. Is Maoism and communism in the Soviet Union under Khrushchev, is that compatible with each other? Or does it lead to conflict? Does Khmer Rouge communism conflict with Vietnamese communism? Which it did. They fought a war with each other. Not necessarily over the ideology, but they did. They did fight a war. You know, so how do these types of communism view each other? So that's something I would like to do. That's a really good way to compare the different ideologies. And then number five will be like these other things. You know, what is the communist ideal? What is that particular communist ideology's view of warfare? How should war be fought? From what I've looked at so far, it looks like Mao Zedong wrote a lot about war, how war should be conducted. Within that too, what about personalities? You know, cults of personality, like, should that be a thing? Should we quote-unquote worship Stalin? Should we quote-unquote worship the Kims in the DPRK or in North Korea? Or does that communist ideology even talk about personalities? And another thing I would also like to look at, what about its view on this ideology's view on religion? So in Stalinism, in early Stalinism, with the mass repressions and so on, where the purges and the Holodomor and everything, religion was brutally persecuted. So, but at the same time, the church was also kind of subjugated to the state in many ways, right? But then when World War II came to the Soviet Union, when the Great Patriotic War happened, they started allowing the church to operate more independently. And so, because it was a great propaganda effort for the war, right? And I made a podcast about this. I made two podcasts about that, actually. So it's so what is this communist ideology's view on religion? You know, whether that be Christianity or Islam or Buddhism, perhaps in China and Vietnam and North Korea, right? So what are the views on religion? And then I would also like to look at other philosophical points that might be unique to that particular ideology. For example, Stalin wrote a lot about dialectical materialism, right? So is there a distinct Stalinist view of that philosophy or of that Marxist doctrine? So again, going through that framework, one, class conflict, two, revolution, three, foreign policy, number four, relations with other types of communism, and miscellaneous other things that are worth comparing. So I think that's it. I hope this was a good introduction. It was a lot longer than I thought it would be. I thought it would be done really quickly, but yeah, I think that's pretty much it. And I would like to just, again, stress, I'm not promising a timeline. I'm not promising to talk about all the ideologies I briefly mentioned here. But what I did want to do is I did want to introduce kind of a series and kind of talk about future plans and so on. But I also wanted to just, again, reinforce that point in history. Nothing is a monolith. You look at communism, there are many different forms of communism, and they are in conflict with each other sometimes, right? So that will happen. Just like any other thing, you know, we mentioned Christianity and Islam, but if you just look at Christianity, you have Christianity. You have people claiming to be Christians, and then one will be Trinitarian, view God as God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit. Then you'll have others that don't. You'll have Christians that believe that hell is eternal conscious torment, and then you'll have others that hell doesn't exist. You'll have others that will say that hell is temporary until sin is purged. You know, things like that, right? So there's never a monolith in all of these things. There's a lot of nuance. As an historian and as a person, I do believe there are absolutes. There are absolutes. Yes, there is right and wrong. There is good and evil. There are things that happened and there are things that didn't. Yes, absolutely. But when you are talking about ideologies, it's important to look at them accurately. Even if you don't like it or even if you like it, look at it accurately, right? That's a very important point to remember. And I just wanted to mention that. And I'm repeating myself because I said this before. But in any case, I hope that you're all doing great. I hope the new year has been good for you so far. And we're two weeks in. Wow, imagine. We'll be celebrating Christmas 2024 before long. Anyway, guys, take care. Love you all. And I hope you're doing well. And we'll see you in the next podcast. I hope in the next week.